Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Peter Paul Brazil, and we're waiting for our theme to go up. I think I hear it. It's very appropriate. A lot of angry Americans out there want to send some politicians and media people and profiteers on both sides to the guillotine. That term has actually been used for some of these people. But anyway, we don't recommend violence. Get them at the ballot box. Excuse me. We'll start with today's birthdays, although this is an infamous day in San Francisco's history and the California and the federal courts. Not the courts specifically, but some of the people, the staff attorneys and clerks who have altered filings and all kinds of illegalities. But anyway, let's get to the births, some interesting ones today. One of the great union leaders was born, Sidney Hillman, 1887. One of the interesting psychologists, Eric Fromm, was born in 1900. And then we have a couple of actresses, Joan Crawford, born in San Antonio, Texas. You wouldn't know it by her accent. Louise Lasseur, and I understand she was a real rough on her kids. And then the great Japanese director, Akira Kurosawa, was born today. And then we had Monique Van Doren, sexy blonde. I think he was born in Belgium. And then the great opera singer, Norman Bailey, great bass. And then the guy who developed the V2 system, Werner, Dr. Werner von Braun, controversial because of the slave labor. He was born today in Germany in 1912. And then this is of relevance to us who are concerned about what's going to happen to the practice of medicine and insurance and all that. Today, Dr. Barney Clark, a dentist and a Mormon from Seattle, received the first artificial heart developed, I think, by Jarvik at the University of Utah's Medical Center, and he lived 112 days. We also had, that was the first artificial heart. And, of course, we should be concerned about all of these medical milestones and what will happen, if anything will happen. And a lot of people think things will happen that affects medical research, access to treatment, the cost of insurance, the number of medical practitioners, nurses, and the availability of hospital beds and the community health care clinics, which nobody is they're starting to talk about a little bit. They just discovered a couple of them. We have 5,000 of them across the country, and I've said this repeatedly, having been in the field myself for a couple of years before my retirement. There are $9 billion allocated last year, budgeted by Congress, and this community health care network has been in place since the Truman administration in 1946, and it offers, they cannot deny medical care, basic medical care, to anyone, and they can't deny them if they're an illegal alien. And I understand that a lot of illegal aliens are the ones who have been using the emergency room, and we've got five of these clinics and emergency rooms in Los Angeles County, city and county, which have closed because they've been overloaded. But it's interesting, here in San Francisco, Nancy Pelosi's stomping grounds, in a manner of speaking, we have at least 9 of these clinics, and they're getting all kinds of money for rehab facilities to expand services, and they offer basic services. They're not going to do open heart transplants or a major surgery, but they do a lot of basic things in prenatal care, and the resources are there. And why the media people, both alternative and corporate, ignore this, it's incomprehensible. Also today, in 1775, and this is still ringing today with the Tea Party and other people, citizens who are concerned about the direction this Obama administration has taken. Patrick Henry uttered the phrase, "Give me liberty or death," and I think we're going to see variations and hear variations on that in the coming months. And, of course, in 1806, Lewis and Clark arrived here on the West Coast and then started their trip back. And inventions, this is interesting. We've got four of them on this date. The first Otis elevator was installed in New York. The first streetcar in 1858 was patented, I think, in Philadelphia. In Wisconsin, the rolling flour mill was invented. And in 1912, the Dixie Cup was invented. It's an interesting day for inventions. And then in the field of education, it's kind of ironic, in 1868, the University of California was founded in Oakland. We didn't have a Berkeley per se then. And, of course, 100 years later, we've had the riots at Berkeley. I attended there briefly. Not the riots, but the classes. And then, interestingly, Oklahoma, which Dr. Tom Coburn is the junior senator, we have in 1889 President Benjamin Harrison, the son of William Henry Harrison, one-term Republican. He opened Oklahoma for white settlement. I think it's called the Oklahoma Land Rush. And Harrison was an interesting guy. When I did my research on the presidents, he was very circumspect about any type of bribery. He was a one-term president. He was between the Grover-Cleveland administrations. Grover-Cleveland was elected. Then he lost the election when he ran for re-election. He lost to Benjamin Harrison, Republican. And then Grover-Cleveland came back and won election again, the only interregnum in the U.S. history of the presidency. And Benjamin Harrison, I think, had a son. They were from Indiana. There are only two presidents from Indiana, Harrison and the two Harrisons. And, of course, we had Woodrow Wilson's vice president. He was such a non-entity. He was only remembered for one thing. What this country needs is a good 5-cent cigar. And it was about the Woodrow Wilson, Thomas Woodrow Wilson's administration. And their historians are taking another look at Woodrow Wilson because of he's the one that foisted the Federal Reserve on us and a lot of other things that are become very controversial and questionable down through history. Talking about usurpation of power and political corruption and the politicians who were totalitarians, in 1919, Mussolini founded the Fascist Party in Italy. Mussolini was not a lawyer. He was trained as a school teacher. He was very anti-clerical, anti-Catholic. Strange for an Italian. Of course, we have our hypocritical Catholics, like Nancy Pelosi and others, Bart Stupak and other people. We used to say they may be in our church, but they're not going to be allowed to be in our pew, nor handle the collection basket, nor count what's in the collection basket. They're so bad. And then in 1933, we have seen the people who have seen or who were around at that time, the Reichstag, after Hindenburg had died, President Hindenburg was the only one who could block Hitler from total dictatorial powers. The Reichstag, under the leadership of Hermann Göring, Der Dicky he was called because he was so grotesquely fat, and he was a pedophile and an opium I think it was opium was his addiction. Anyway, they granted Hitler enabling powers, and that gave Hitler the legal cover to do all these horrible things that he did to the German people. And then when the Wehrmacht, World War II started, all the horrible things that they, atrocities they perpetrated on not only Jews, but anybody else that that they considered, not to mention the Russians, and people who opposed the Nazi ideology and Hitler's regime. Also, along those lines about in education, in 1925, and there's a movie about this, Inherit the Wind, although they changed the names, Tennessee was the first state to prohibit the teaching of evolution. And, of course, it was called the Scope. It was a trial when Clarence Darrow, the great criminal lawyer, was defending Scopes, a young teacher in Tennessee. And William Jennings Bryan, who had been a presidential candidate and a populist, he was a fundamentalist, and he was prosecuting Scopes, or in that infamous Scopes, called the Scopes Monkey Trial. excuse me. And then, this is interesting, and it comes up in relationship to the case I'm going to talk about today. In 1981, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld a statute, and I've got to check this. Shame on me for not doing it before the show. I just came across it. They upheld a statute. I don't know which state it came from, but there was an appeal, and the statute was that only men can be prosecuted for statutory rape. Of course, we're now, nearly 30 years down the road here, and we're finding out more and more women, especially women teachers, are engaging in luring young boys, underage boys, into sex with them. And it's happened in Florida, happened in Seattle, in Washington State, and I think there were a couple cases. But we're seeing more and more that women are just as predatory as men. It's just that they haven't got they've had the cover, no pun intended, and they haven't got the publicity. But, of course, there was a joke that young boys, they consider this a quick leap into manhood. And, there was all the schoolyard bragging about, I had a weekend with my teacher, and this has happened. So I'll check on that law, and we'll expand on it further, because legal research is one of my specialties and one of the things I spent a lot of experience with. Today, March 23rd in 1996, it's a day of infamy in San Francisco, and it's a day which 15 years later has cost the American taxpayer an estimated $15 million. And I'll explain that. $10 million went for a building here in San Francisco and promoted in part by Nancy Pelosi, named after Juan P. Freyr, called P. Freyr Plaza. This was a guy who was an illegal alien who came to this country under student visa in 1968. He was supposed to return to Argentina. He was from a prominent Argentine banking family. And he got involved in the case called Los Siete, which involved seven, that means the seven in Spanish, for those who don't know Spanish, who were accused and prosecuted here in San Francisco for murdering Brodnick, a San Francisco cop who was investigating them for burglary in, of all places, the Castro. And, of course, the Castro wasn't gay then as it is now. And during an altercation, they were apprehended in what is now Noe Valley. And Brodnick was murdered, and his partner, McGoran, was seriously wounded. And we'll get into the significance of that. Well, Pifre got involved in their defense, and what happened was all the left-wingers and came into San Francisco accusing the police of brutality and anti-Hispanic hysteria and all of this, and these guys were defending himself against, quote, crooked cops. I didn't get directly involved in that case. I did follow it. I was on the street on an investigation doing something else at the time, but I'll never forget that day when the helicopters were flying overhead and police sirens screaming throughout this what is known as the Mission, where these guys were apprehended. Every one of them died violently, either in prison or died violently. And their lawyer was a guy named Charles Gary, who was the Black Panthers lawyer. In fact, the Black Panthers were involved, and they were a bunch of thugs and still are. And Gary was, interestingly, of Armenian ethnicity. He anglicized his name. Good lawyer, but he had crooked clients. And, their karma caught up with them one by one and eventually. But on the night of March 23rd, 1996, a young 18-year-old sailor, Stephen Robert Neri, whose mother signed him Palm Desert down there in Southern California. He was born in Mississippi, and then the family moved to California. And at 17 and a half, he was signed into the U.S. Navy. And because he wasn't 18, the mother had to sign. And according to Captain Vincent Averna, who has worked on this case voluntarily, a retired JAG, who was himself involved in a case depicted in the movie A Few Good Men, he reviewed all the court-martial findings and upheld them. Anyway, Vernon has always said that when a youth is signed into the Navy becomes the substitute parent and protect these young males and young women from predators and violations by local civil authorities. There's been a long history in this country, especially in the South, and in rural areas where crooked sheriffs and in the cities, crooked cops and judges, such as in San Francisco, have railroaded. They don't like the military, and we had a prosecutor, a corrupt lawyer named Terrence Hallinan, K.O. He had a lot of conflicts with the military. The whole history of his family has been connected to assassinations, what borders on treason. His grandfather, Patrick Hallinan, was involved in the assassination of Lord Cavendish, who was a peace emissary to Ireland back in the very late 1800s, and there's a lot of history behind the Cavendish family and its connection to Fred Astaire's sister, Adele, and to a judge in the P. Foray probate case. It's too much to get into right now, but we'll get into it as we are doing the episodes on this case, because very few people understand what really happened, and it's a case of national and international importance because of who was involved, what was involved, and what is involved, and it spans from national security, the international sex trade, rampant public corruption, abuse of civil rights of military personnel, male rape cover-up, and public employees who were involved in illegal drugs, extortion, rigging cases. There has been, although we have sexual predators who are prominent in this city and in this state and in this county, unless you're a Roman Catholic priest who's been caught or been accused, there has been no prosecution of a sexual predator in San Francisco County in the last, I'd say, 10 years. The last case involving homosexuality and politics was the Harvey Milk assassination or murder, whatever you want to call it. And there's some questions about, did he provoke Dan White? Some interesting things about Harvey Milk's relationship with his fellow member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, or aldermen, as they're known back east. Excuse me. Anyway, on the night of March 23rd, late night in here in San Francisco, North Beach, those of you familiar with the entertainment section of the city, Stephen Airey was on Liberty, and he came over 50 miles from Alameda County in the Naval Base, and his posting on the USS Carl Vinson, came over to meet his girlfriend at the Palladium, which was a heterosexual youth disco, which even the San Francisco Weekly, an alternative paper, wrote a long article about how homosexual men were coming in there and preying on young males who were looking for girls. And P. Foray had been there before, and he had grabbed a young male by the testicles, and there was a fight, and they were both arrested because it was mutual battery. Somehow P. Foray got out of that. He should have been deported because he was not a U.S. citizen, never applied for U.S. citizenship, but had done a lot of illegal things, including ripping off millions of dollars, we suspect, from the federal poverty program. And we'll get into that a little later when we do the rest of the episodes, because there's a lot of paper documentation on that. Anyway, P. Foray was at a cocaine party in the Castro, and he told his fellow partygoers he was going out looking for a young white boy. And he had done this before. He had lived in the Castro and had lured young males, especially military recruits types who were on Liberty, and lured them to his apartment and lured them into there were fights. And his lawyer lived underneath him downstairs in the downstairs apartment and had to defend him in one of these cases. And the lawyer had been involved, lawyer who was his neighbor, was involved in the National Lawyers Guild. And during the Vietnam War, he would go over to the Oakland Army base, and the guys who didn't want to step forward and take the oath of allegiance to the United States and come under federal military jurisdiction, which is what happens when males were drafted, and women who joined also, the Universal Code of Military Justice, which is a federal law, and it even trumps the FBI jurisdiction. An FBI agent cannot go onto a military base and yank somebody off the base. There's a memorandum of understanding, and they have to do certain procedural things, which are designed to be protections, and also it's turf. But what happened with Stephen Neri, fraudulent documents were concocted and used to get him out of the brig. We'll get into that later on. Anyway, the kid's waiting for his, since he was a Native American ethnicity, he just was learning to drink when he went into the Navy. And P4A saw him there. Neri was waiting for his girlfriend and didn't show up. And P4A initiated conversation. Well, Neri had to go to the toilet, and he left his drink on the table, and there's evidence that P4A probably used Rohypnol in the drink. And when Neri came back, the drink was still there, and it had been Mickey Fender drugged. And P4A says to him, I'll drive you back to your base, because Neri said the BART train had closed for the night. And there was no way to get back to his posting 50 miles away in Alameda, and he had to be on duty Sunday. This was a Saturday night. So P4A starts to drive him to the freeway, the highway, and then says, I've been doing cocaine. I don't want to get stopped by the highway patrol. And there was good reason for that, because if he had been stopped by the highway patrol, they would have checked his immigration status, and he would have been, he would have been held for immigration and probably deported, because he had a criminal record down in San Jose, California, where he propositioned a San Jose undercover vice cop in a public toilet. And we've documented all this. It's just so much, and we're trying to make it understandable to people because of the agenda, the consequences, and the cost of this case, and it isn't over. Excuse me, I'm still getting over this cold, by the way. Well, anyway, Neri accepts the offer, and when they get to the freeway, P4A says, let's go to my pad, and I'll call some girls, we'll party. But they do P4A doesn't tell him that he's stopping at a Wells Fargo ATM to get some money, and he propositions Neri, who had never been in a situation before. He was tired, he felt strange, it was from the drink, and he was inexperienced, totally. And the Navy doesn't teach their people, or none of the other services, as far as I can determine, and I've tried to research this with them, teaches their people how to avoid sexual predators. We have had over 10 young military personnel, primarily young Marines, who have been drugged, seduced, mutilated, and murdered. And one of the guys who did this was a guy named Randy Kraft, a sexual predator who has an estimated 50 murders and sexual mutilations of young males from Southern California up to Canada and as far east as Michigan. And he's sitting on death row with other people like Scott Peterson. And there's something interesting about Scott Peterson that just recently came up, which might surprise people. We're pretty sure it's him. Unexpected, but anyway, this is what's happened in this state, because there are sexual predators out there. And as I've documented on our solid website, Amicus Veritas, AmiCusVeritas, or Verzola.com, VERZOLA.com, which will roll over faster, you will see how the homosexual video voyeurs who are on the public payroll here in San Francisco and in the courts are involved on the sideline in this international sex trade, prostitution, drugs, extortion for sex, a lot of things, and we have documented much of this, and used their own hard copy newspapers and ads that they've used, and their videos, how to seduce young military recruits. We'll be putting that up. It's also part of the court filing in this illegal prosecution of Stephen Neri for defending himself against anal rape perpetrated by Juan P4A. Well, anyway, they go to, he propositions Stephen Neri. Neri didn't know what to do and got conned into a minor sex act. I'm watching my language because we're on radio. Anyway, P4A then puts on a condom and decides he wants more, and wanted to get a sexual anal situation. Anyway, Neri resists. There's a fight. It goes throughout the house. The people downstairs don't call the police, because this has happened before, these nocturnal disturbances involving P4A when he brought young males home. So I figured, well, this is par for the course, and it'll get over with. Well, it did. It ended up in Pfeffer eventually dying. But anyway, the fight goes into the bathroom. A shower rod is broken. Pfeffer picks it up and breaks Neri's hand and tries to get him to submit to anal rape. Neri grabs the shower bar, and because it's got a cookie cutter edge, it's sharp, as those of you know about shower bars, and tries to ward Pfeffer off and ends up choking him to stop him. Then he gets dressed, and since there's no cabs or telephones or transportation, he had to walk nearly a half a mile or so to get a taxi and or to get back to Alameda to get his broken hand taken care of, the only medical care that he got. Well, anyway, Pfeffer had a roommate, a woman roommate, who always disappeared on the weekends, apparently, so Pfeffer could engage in his sexual escapades with young males, and they discover that Pfeffer is dead. And so Neri had left his T-shirt behind, and it was the cops figured out the code. In the meantime, Neri had called the San Francisco police to say to inquire about Pfeffer, because he left him alive, apparently. And we don't know if somebody came into Pfeffer's apartment and finished him off. That has never been examined or investigated fully by the public defender who was pro-homosexual and any of the subsequent two other lawyers who were involved before we got involved. The lawyer that we were worked on this case was a U.S. Army lawyer during World War II. Raul Vicente Almason, whose son-in-law was distantly related or is distantly related to the late General George C. Marshall, the head of the military forces in World War II. Interesting, all these people, all these connections. But anyway, cops go over to Alameda, and without a lawyer being present, and this is mandatory for military personnel, when they're questioned by superior officers in a serious matter, a lawyer or a JAG has to be present to protect their military Miranda rights. So they interrogate this kid who's still suffering from post-traumatic rape stress, and the San Francisco prosecutor's deputies forge a federal turnover of personnel document, which was concealed in the kangaroo court trial. And they pull this kid out of the brig on the USS Carl Vinson. The Secretary of the Navy knows nothing about this because it happened on the weekend of March 29th, a Friday morning. And, of course, we're 3 hours behind on this coast from Washington, and everybody in Washington who can get out for the weekend gets out early and leave the Pentagon and whatever. So Neri spends the weekend in, he's taken over San Francisco, again interrogated without a lawyer present, and he didn't know his Miranda rights, so the waiver that he gave was invalid because it was not informed consent. Anyway, and then for the next 3.5 years, he is denied medical care for the broken hand. He's denied access to Pfeffer's AIDS and communicable disease status, and he's denied access to fresh. He didn't see the sunlight or breathe fresh air for 3.5 years, kept in you might call a tiger cage conditions. Well, anyway, go to our YouTube site. We'll have more up there at YouTube, Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas, and we'll be updating that and other relevant things. And this is an ongoing case. Also, if you can, pick up the book written by Jack Cashel, What's the Matter with California? This is one of the, I'd say a chapter. There are a lot of other things covered, like O.J., the Manson family, a lot of things. So also go to verzola.com, verzola.com, and you'll look up the Stephen Neri case, and we will continue with this episode probably on YouTube and updating the audio for our Amicus Veritas and Blog Talk Radio. So thank you for listening, and if you want to review this broadcast, I leave everything up in the archives, so for people who either tuned in late or didn't have time to listen for the full half hour, it's up there permanently, and we do have it on CD-ROM for those of you who are interested. Do follow this case, especially if you know somebody who is going into the military or is in the military as young, naive. They are targets of opportunity. This is Peter Paul Brizola. Thank you for listening. And tune in next Tuesday.